So let's talk about life for a second. I want to talk about Dallas specifically for a moment. We like to be busy. Has anybody noticed that? There's a culture here that in some sense worships busyness. We talk with people. I don't know how many conversations I have with people in a week, and it's like, how are you doing? I'm busy. And it's almost like this, you know, it's almost like this badge of honor. It's like, if I say I'm busy, then that means I'm important and I matter and I, you know, I have status of some sort. So this is a reality that I have found to be more true here than any place that I've lived. And I've lived a number of different places at this point. And I don't know why that is, but I think we work harder at it in Dallas for whatever reason. Again, I can't tell you exactly why that is, but we seem to work harder at it here than just about anywhere I've ever been. To make sure that everybody knows that we matter, to make sure everybody knows that we're important. And so there's this part of that busyness is in our activities. It's in the things that we're trying to do all the time. It's also the things that we then impose upon our kids and all the activities that they need to have, and in some sense to justify ourselves as well. And I was thinking about this this morning. I was actually just praying through this a little bit, that this is not how I think God intends for us to live our lives. If I look at the life of Christ, I don't find somebody who is frantically running around doing things. Like, I just don't see that. I think there is an urgency to what he's doing. I think that there is certainly an intentionality in every step that he takes. But it is so controlled. Like, didn't you just read the Gospels? And it's so measured. It's like, and now I'm going to spend time away from everything. I'm taking time and I'm going to stop just to spend time praying and with my Father, right? And then I'm going to have this time where I'm sitting down with my disciples and we're going to have this conversation. I've got this time where I'm teaching the crowds. I've got this time when I'm healing people. And there is an urgency to what he's doing. He's coming to proclaim the kingdom, and then he's going to obviously go to the cross and save all of us. But there's not a frantic pace to it. I just don't see that. In fact, there's this great story that if you think about it, it would be so exasperating, like in the moment where there's this little girl who is dying and her dad's like, going to die. And Jesus is like, okay, here I come. And then this woman bumps into him who's sick. And Jesus is like, oh, hold on. I'm going to actually deal with this woman right now. And you can imagine the dad being like, what? Are you? No. Okay, she's a little sick. I get it. But my daughter over here is dying. And Jesus is like, oh, no, I'm right here. I'm dealing with this woman. And it's so measured. It's so intentional. And I don't always feel that in my own life. And I don't see that a lot within Dallas culture, within a lot of families that I work with, a lot of people that I meet with. It's just very easy to get caught up in so many things. And I do think that it's an addiction. I think that there's this need for more and more and more, and I have to be busy, and I have to find ways to cram my time. And my concern, and what I want us to talk about this morning, is how we take that and we then impose that upon our kids. And that becomes something that we actually begin to teach them. And so for example, last night, I'll just share this with you. I was at a fundraising dinner, and I try really hard not to spend too many nights out for my kids. And if you have to spend a lot of nights out because of work and other things, this is not to guilt trip you, okay? I'm saying for my family, as I'm thinking through this, this is a decision that I have the luxury of making, okay? And so I'm going to take advantage of that because two things. One is I don't want my kids to ever think that, two things, very important. One, that these things, like daddy's got a meeting or daddy's got this dinner he's got to go to and daddy's got this fundraiser, like whatever. And those things are more important than you. Like, I don't ever want to communicate that to them. Hey, I'd love to spend time with you, but this over here, this is actually more significant than you. And then the other side of that is I never want to communicate to my kids that that is what determines my value or my worth. So I don't want to give the impression to my kids that it's because I've got this dinner or this fundraiser or this meeting or whatever, and that's what makes me important. Daddy's really important. I got to go to this meeting. Daddy's really, I've got, this is how much people respect me or this is how much people value me because I got to go to this fundraiser. I've been invited to this thing. Like, I don't want them to glean that from me that's how they're going to then for themselves go, okay, that's how dad defines himself, and so therefore that's how I should define myself as well. So I think there's a very important, as we talk about activities this morning for our kids, I think we have to start with a self-evaluation. And what are we modeling for our kids? It's okay to be busy. A lot of jobs are very demanding. But how we navigate that, how we communicate that to our kids says a lot about, I think will be very significant in how our kids then take that from us and move forward. So does that make sense? If this is where I'm finding my self-worth, then that's how they're going to define their self-worth. And so I don't want to model that for them in that way. So we do have this culture. We do have this very busy culture. We have a very lots of activities, lots of pressure, I think, on parents to engage their kids in a lot of different activities. And so how do we handle this? How do we navigate this? What are the healthy boundaries? And so that's what this whole series has been about. It's not saying, we're not trying to say, here's a line and all activities are bad or all activities are good. We've tried to have this balanced approach to each topic to say, okay, there's some tracks that we want to run on. And then within here, there's wisdom, there's a lot of things that we learn, and it depends on the child, and we're trying to kind of navigate this in the healthiest way possible. And so when we think about activities, understand that I'm not saying all activities are bad, and I'm not saying that absolutely all activities are great. Okay, how do we evaluate this in a way that's going to be healthy for us and for our kids and for our families? So let me give you a few principles. We're just going to kind of dive into this morning, and I want to start with this one. And someday I'm going to actually have time to shorten these so that I can write them quickly. But the first one is this. Don't let fear, guilt, comparison, or and I'm going to call this fantasy. I'll explain what that means in a minute. Win. So all these things, don't do that. So here's what I mean by this. I think it's very tempting as parents that we look around and we compare our parenting to everybody else's. And so we look around and we say, okay, so-and-so, they've got their kids involved in these activities, and therefore we need to have our kids involved in those activities as well. Real quick, I'm defining activities, generally speaking, as extracurricular activities. So let's be real clear. I don't mean like your kid goes home and plays Lego or plays on their video games or something like that. Those are not the activities we're talking about. I do want to talk to about technology for a little bit at the end if we have time, but that's kind of a different category. I'm speaking more about like sports, music, art, dance, chess team, right, clubs, those types of things. These are areas that we involve some sort of like commitment, investment, often financial, coaching, those types of activities, okay? So just so we're on the same page. We look around and we see all these different activities that all these other parents are engaging their kids in, and it's very easy to think, okay, we got to do the same thing. So we're comparing them. And then some of that is a sense of guilt that, okay, they're involving their kids in those activities, and we're not. Oh my goodness, we must be terrible parents. I can't believe that we're not giving our children every opportunity that every other parent is giving their child as well. Or even just that one child who has that very special opportunity, and we're not doing that. What kind of parents are we? And then I think some of that is fed by fear. That if we don't involve our kids in these activities in these ways, then little Junior, man, he's not going to have the same opportunities. He's not going to get into the same Ivy League school. He's not going to get the same job and make the same money. He's not going to attract the same spouse. They're not going to have beautiful children who they can then mess up by involving them in all these activities. So it's terrible. Like, it's just going to end up in this horrible, horrible place. And so there's this fear that drives it as well. The fantasy part of it, that's kind of a caveat that your kids are not going to be professional athletes, but we'll get to that one in a second. Okay, so when we think about this, right, fear and guilt and comparison, these are not our friends. This is not a good way to think about how we involve our children in extracurricular activities. There are a lot of good activities. I'm going to talk about the benefit of activities in just a moment, but these are not good reasons. This is not a good place to start if we think about what we want our kids to be involved in. Okay, so we have to ask the question, what do we want? What are our goals for our kids? What are our goals for our family? What do you dream of when you think about, okay, 18, 20, 5 for some of you, like wherever they are, when our kids leave, what's that going to look like? What kind of a relationship are they going to have with the family? What are they going to have experienced? What do I want for them? And then in 20 years, you know, when they're grown, when they've got kids, what am I trying to cultivate towards? What am I building towards? What do those dreams look like? And so here's my concern about activities. They can become very obsessive. We can get very caught up in activities. And if we stop, most of us would say these activities have value because they are teaching our kids valuable life lessons, correct? I mean, isn't that kind of what we want for these activities? It's like, I want my kids to experience these things because it will be character building. It will, and it's going to give them life experiences that are unique. They're different from school. They're different from just having fun. There's good reasons for why we do those activities. My concern is that oftentimes the investment way, 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 way outweighs the benefit. So I give you a silly example. When I graduated from seminary with a master's degree, not a doctorate like that guy. When I graduated with a master's degree, I had several people who were very, I don't know what they were thinking. They were like, you should do a PhD. And I was like, not going to happen. No, no, you should do a PhD. You got to do a PhD. I said, no, not going to happen. Because I don't want to be a professor. That's not how I think that God has wired me or how I think God's called me. I want to be a pastor. Now, would I be a better pastor if I got a PhD? Probably. I think it would be valuable. Like, there would be some things that I would get out of a PhD that could equip me and would equip me to be a better pastor, but I'm fairly convinced that it would be this much investment for this much return. The reason that Andy Weilman, I think, is a fantastic pastor, and I love working with him and for him, is not because he has a doctorate, because he doesn't. It's because he has years and years of life experience of being a pastor, of working and walking alongside people. So, would the PhD make me a better pastor? Yeah, it might, but it's this much investment on this much return. I think that we have to keep that in mind when we think about extracurricular activities for our kids. It's great that your kids are involved in sports. It's great that your kids are involved in the chess team or whatever. There is a lot of value in that. We're going to talk, like I said, more about that in a moment, but we need to be wary about that investment versus the return. What are we really hoping that they're going to glean from that experience? Is it that they're going to have better character, or is it so that they win the trophy and we get to feel really awesome and they feel really awesome? Hey, I'm not opposed to competition. I'm not opposed to sports. But again, we have to recalibrate this, I think, or at least be cautious in how we think about it. Okay. Let's talk about this one for a second, real quick. And this is especially for those of you with sons. And I have to remind myself of this a lot. My boys are not going to be professional athletes. We live in North Dallas, and we live in Plano, which is sports fanatic. It's incredible. My second grader is just started baseball, and they started practice a month and a half over before the game start. And I was like, wait a minute, why are we starting practice right now? And it's because it's getting serious. He's in second grade. It's like, okay, all right. Now, you know what? I appreciate these coaches. They're doing a great job. And my son, who is uber competitive, loves it because they're coaching us and it's no nonsense and I'm learning. Like, he's thriving, okay? Not opposed to any of that. But you go out there. I think it was Matt McBride who shared, and I thought he did such a fantastic job. They've evidently quit coming to our class, I just noticed. I just looked around. I'm like, I haven't seen them in a while. Oh, they come in after you? Oh, okay. Well, maybe they'll make it in here. Okay, so I'm going to talk about Matt before he gets in here. I've been getting that vibe. I've been getting that vibe for a while. Matt had a great, he said, every dad of sons, you go through this, you watch your little junior go up there and he plays T-ball and he hits it really well and you're like, oh, major leagues, you know, here it comes. And we never say it out loud, but inside we're kind of thinking, just what if? And so as Paul said, we have to keep telling ourselves repeatedly, they're not going to be professional athletes. So again, what is the investment that you're making in that sport versus the return? What are you actually hoping that they're going to get out of it? And also, what's the cost for your family? I think that's really significant. What's the investment? What's the cost? for what's the return. There are very significant, they're great returns. I believe in sports. I love it. I love music. I want my kids to do those things. But again, we need to recalibrate these things. The amount of investment that we can make in terms of time and money and heartache and just what you're not getting to do as a family with sports specifically, but just about anything, is staggering. Staggering. I mean, it is amazing to me the amount of money that you can spend on sports equipment, right? Not to mention the private coaching lessons, if you can do that, or the fees and all the rest of it. There's a place for all of that. And if you have the opportunity and you can afford to do more than other people and you want to give that opportunity for your child, that's okay. But again, what's the investment versus what's the return? I don't think there was anything else I wanted to add about that. She could be a professional athlete. I think it tends to be. Yeah, that's true. That was really sexist of me. I apologize. Please don't. I mean, I shouldn't have said that. That was. Well, that's what I was going to. That's actually what I was going to add is, some of us are going, no, I'm not crazy. I'm not thinking professional sports. I'm just thinking college scholarships, which is very true for both men and women. And just go Google statistics of college athletes with scholarships. That will help right the ship a little bit. Like, it ain't gonna happen. And even if it did, the average scholarship is like a few hundred dollars. It's
you have a better chance of making an academic scholarship.
Much. Much. And you guys have smart kids, so see, you're gonna be fine. See? Just keep doing that. But yeah, that's so true. And that's where, I don't wanna be that parent who with my daughter or my sons is sucking the life and the fun out of sports for my kids, because you got to be awesome so you can get that scholarship or you can do whatever. We just got to be realistic, and we got to think about how we're showing our kids with that. If your kids aren't having fun with what their extracurricular activities are, can I just encourage you? You need to rethink that. That's actually one of the best benefits of those extracurricular activities, is that it's a combination of discipline and fun. They're going to do discipline through school, but they don't always enjoy it. They're gonna have to stick with it. They're gonna have to do it. But there's a unique combination with extracurricular where it's discipline, it's perseverance. They stick with it, but there's also something that they enjoy doing. In fact, this is actually one of the other principles that I'll just hit real quick, which is they're good, right? Activities are or can be good for our kids. Again, I'm not here to say all extracurricular activities are bad. There's real benefit. There are real life lessons that our kids glean from these things. One of the most helpful analysis of this I've seen is Angela Duckworth in her book, Grit. She, kind of back up for a moment, she is a psychologist out of Columbia University, and she is talking about, she's trying to investigate what are the key components to success, sustained success over time. And so she does all of this research looking at people who are very successful in all of their fields. And one of the areas that she did a huge study was with West Point grads and which ones continue and succeed and which ones wash out and what are the determining factors. And it's a fascinating book. If you ever have a chance to read it, I encourage you to do so. Her paradigm, if you will, is that talent only takes you so far, but it's talent times effort, which she's going to define as grit. And so she ends up identifying grit as kind of the key determining characteristic of sustained success. And the way she defines grit is that it is passion plus purpose plus perseverance. Okay? And so the beauty of this is, so passion, she goes, okay, I want my children then to discover their passion. Right, I want them to figure out what it is that they are passionate about. Well, the way that they do that is through trying a whole lot of different things. This is one of the beauties of extracurricular activities. They're exposed to a number of different activities, right? Whether it's sports or music or art or dance or whatever it is. So they're discovering what their passion might be, and they're also learning how to cultivate that passion as they remain committed to that activity. The second part is purpose, that there's a goal in mind with it. You're trying to accomplish something with whatever that activity is. And then third, perseverance, that you do stick with it. So when she talks about activities, and I found this personally to be very helpful, what she encourages, and obviously this can look a lot of different ways, but the way they've done it in their family, for example, is to say, okay, our children are going to have extracurricular activities, but only never more than one or two at a time, period. Usually a musical instrument and a sport. So there's some sort of balance that goes in with that. Prior to high school, what she encourages is letting children choose their own passion. Like, what do you want to try this year? Oh, you want to try baseball or soccer? Which do you want to do? And obviously, if there's different seasons, you understand what I'm saying. Some things are year-round. If you want to do gymnastics, that could be a year-round activity, ballet, year-round. If it's sports, it might just be a sport per season at a time. But what do you want to do? So actually leaving it to the children to think through, okay, well, I would like to try this. Great. But if you do it, you got to finish it. And then what she recommends is the next year, blank slate. What would you like to try again? If they would like to still do baseball, let them do baseball again. If they still like violin, they do violin again. Now, a little caveat here. My kids are going to play the piano, and that's probably going to be the only option that they've got. That's because I play the piano. But when it comes to sports and other things, I'm going to give them a lot of freedom. It may be that after a year or two, we go, okay, let's try violin or try something else. So I'm not going to be militant about it, but we are going to start with the piano. We have a piano. Yes?
Do you have to give them choices, or what if they say, I don't want to do anything?
Then I think it would be a good idea to tell them what they are going to do. They have to choose something. I think that's how I would approach it. You got to pick something. Because there is value. Like, again, there's so much value in these activities. They learn how to work with other people. They learn how to receive feedback from coaches, not a teacher, not a parent. There's a unique relationship with a coach. They learn resilience. They learn how to stick with it. They learn hard work, the value of hard work. And again, they're discovering things about themselves as they go. So there's so much value that I wouldn't say, oh yeah, just, you know, feel free to just do whatever you want. Anyway, okay. All right, so I don't want to talk about technology yet. So these activities. Now, here's what's interesting. She then says when you get to high school, make it a two-year commitment. So now you're starting to lengthen it a little bit. So you're going to choose something, but you got to stick with it for 2 years. And here's what I found really fascinating. She actually does an interview with the president of Harvard University. And what he shares is, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he shares this. He said, you know, Harvard looks for two different kinds of students. So write this down. One is the one who scores the perfect, on their SATs. So they're looking for those who are just ridiculously talented, gifted, academic students. Great, we're going to offer you something. The other thing they're looking for is kids involved in extracurricular activities. Now, here's the kick, though, okay? Everybody thinks, I thought, that means do as many as you can with as much diversity as can. But he's very specific. He says what we're looking for are students who picked one, stuck with it, and achieved something. So they're looking for growth within a particular discipline. I find that fascinating and incredibly freeing when it comes to this idea of, okay, how many activities can my kids be involved in? That's actually not even what Harvard's looking for, and I have no delusions that my kids are going to Harvard. But it simply reinforces this idea that major universities, all of this research that Angela Duckworth has done, and just common sense, that getting our kids involved in as many things as possible, there's a law of diminishing returns. So let's pick a couple of things. Let's walk with our kids, give them freedom to choose, pick one or two things, and then stick with it. And they begin to see the benefits from that. Other thoughts or comments? Some of you have kids who are well into this, so please feel free to speak up.
I have a different perspective. From a really small town, my dad was a head coach, athletic director. I was raised in the gym. And then living in College Station for 11 years. Coming here, Dallas is very, there's a black cloud of materialism hanging over it. Don't get me started about all of that. But there is this activities. But what about the other end? What I've experienced when my kids are getting older that I just think is crazy, and aren't y'all probably getting mad at me, is, oh, well, I had to get out of basketball because I had to focus on my academics. And I think that's just a load of crap. So I think kids need to be kids. And the other spectrum of trying to help them be balanced, and You know, I never studied a day in my life, and I did fine in college. I didn't have to go to an Ivy League high school, mm-hmm. college prep, and be out of every sport.
Yeah.
So there's both ends where, ooh, no, you can't ever do any sports because you have to study for 4 hours every night, mm-hmm. which I think is also a Dallas thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of what we're talking about, I think a lot of this does, we probably could have said activities and academics. I think a lot of it is true of both. And in both cases, again, what's the investment for versus the return? I got a bunch of comments now. Yeah.
I was going to say, if you want a free ride and you have a boy, put them in ballet.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Maurice?
How is the Fanbridge Ballet Company?
We're signing Sean up and Eli. Sean and Eli both head for ballet now, right? Yeah, okay, done. Maurice, you got the length, man. You could have been beautiful, yeah. Sorry, who else? What? Sorry, yeah, Jessica.
In hindsight, kids are all grown, but your activities times 3 or 4 or however many kids you have, also comes into play your decision.
Yes, so true.
And
yes.
Just to let you know that it really, even limiting it can later be a good thing. I had 3 all in gymnastics at one time. I hit the jackpot with a company that did all these ages all at the same hour, and it was an hour for me to get anywhere.
Wow. Yeah. We're going to need the name and address of that place. We're going to need the name and address of that place because that's a.
So. It was great for 6 months, but then they wanted child number 2, she was 4, to start team, which is very competitive. Yeah. 3 days a week, tons of work, and opposite times from the other 2 kids. And I was like, okay, no, we can't do that, because I can't dump Dr. Dallas 3 times. You know,
yeah.
This was a different time. But so I just said no. So, but they put so much pressure on you. Your kid is so good. She needs to be this. She'll be cheerleading. So I quit totally. My kids did not go to gymnastics at all. So it was all or nothing, which I think was a good thing. So later on, down to junior high, this was 4. In junior high, she wanted to try out for cheerleader. Well, she didn't make it because she couldn't do all the flip flops and stuff. But at that point, she decided, I'm going to be cheerleader. So we let her use that gear to prepare. She made it the next year.
Okay.
So, you know, the whole life of stress and team and that kind of thing to, I'm going to do this. Her determination.
You gave her the freedom to make that decision.
Yeah, looking back, that was a lesson that I had no idea I was preparing her.
Yeah. And it's a great illustration of just this stuff all sounds so simple on paper, and then in life, it's so much more complicated. You've got kids who want to do we've got 4 kids, and I've got 2 who already have 2 going in 2 different directions. Well, it's just going to get multiplied as they go. So, yeah. I know, whatever, yeah. I'm going to start over here.
I went to the East Coast, but I went to a really competitive high school. So it was very intense and long hours and all that. So the academic pressure was really high.
Yeah.
But then I wanted to do, I did theater, dance, and field hockey.
Uh-huh.
And so I remember, trying to balance those things. And my parents, there was a point where my mom, I had my grades dropped, and by dropped, I got B's. And I had to quit.
Shame on you.
My mom would let me do theater that next season,
mm-hmm.
which was devastating for me to not get to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my grades didn't actually get that much better. And what she realized was I did better when I kept my activities. I just said one at a time, but I balanced everything a little bit better with the activities. So I do think, to September's comment, I think there is a balance you can find.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that I realized myself, as a high school kid, after 2 years of varsity sports, I didn't like the sports as much as I liked the other 2 things. So my senior year, I just didn't play, which everyone thought was insane, that I wasn't going to play the sport. You know, your senior year, that's like...
That's the pinnacle. That's when you got to,
But I didn't want to... It wasn't fun. I was miserable that whole season.
Yeah.
And so I do think there is... By high school level, I think your kids have an ability to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the miss probably for me as a kid was when I was younger, we weren't given as many, I like what you're saying about the choices, because I do think we were only allowed to choose out of the things that my parents, that they liked, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the hardest thing for us as parents, that I want to work through too. Like, I would love for my my daughter to want to do ballet. She does not want to do ballet. Dance was my thing my whole life. She doesn't seem that interested in it.
Yeah.
So I have to like let that go and let her figure out what her thing is. And I think that's a big challenge with activities, and where I think a lot of times parents get in trouble is we try to force our kids into the thing we wanted to do.
Sure.
Or we wanted to do.
And it's one thing, you know, to say, hey, I want you to try it. Let's try it for the first, you know. And then after this, if you don't like it, we'll reevaluate. But especially when they're younger, they don't know what they like or don't like. You know, so that, there's a place for that. But as they get older, you are giving them more. Again, we've said this whole series is we're giving them opportunity to make decisions for themselves and to take responsibility for those. Yeah.
I think we don't look at it this way, but really if you stop and slow down and think about how packed and colorful our calendars are, how stressed out we are because of how packed our calendars are. So much of this, whether it be fear, guilt, comparison, or fantasy, keeping up with the Joneses, all of that, it comes down to idolatry. It comes down to our vision of what our child is going to attain, whether it be through sports or academics or music. Our vision of that is more important than allowing the Holy Spirit to work in our child's life. Our vision of what we need to look like as a family and keeping up with our neighbors or our community is more important than being led by the Spirit to accomplish whatever it is the Lord has for our family. And I think because church is such a social construct of where we live, we look at it socially instead of looking at it from a spiritual standpoint. From a spiritual standpoint, there's nothing wrong with activities at all, but it does come back to that law of diminishing return. And what are you sacrificing for that choice?
Yeah.
And in the moment, like you said, it's hard to execute, but sometimes it's easier to execute if you just stop and realize, okay, what is more important? Is it, am I looking at this as an idol?
Yeah.
Am I worshiping what my child's future career in basketball is? Or am I worshiping the talent that has been given to my child?
Yeah.
Instead of the creator who's given it to him.
And one of the hardest things is if you discover that your child has a real talent, but it's not their passion, you know? And it's like, and you're like, how are you not doing this? You know? And they're like, I don't care. And you're like, so, but it's important as they get older to give them that freedom. And you're headed where I wanted to go with the third one that really summarizes all of this. And that's just be intentional. When I think about my family and I think about my kids, I've got two pretty clear ideas, visions in my mind. And those are informed by my faith, right? They're to your point. On the one hand, with my family, like what I want is for us to love one another. Like, I want my kids to love spending time with each other. I want them to love spending time with mom and dad. I want us to, as a family, love being together and laughing and that being just the family dynamic that we have. I hope someday my kids will want to, like, vacation with us, you know, and not be like, no, we're going to go do something else. Like, I want them to, maybe if I pay for the vacation, that will make it easier, but that probably won't ever be able to happen, let's be honest. So maybe they pay for my vacation. Okay, so in the camping, there we go, we can afford that. And then on the second, the second part of it is, and these go hand in hand, is with my kids. I want my kids, everything we've been talking about this series is to be mature followers of Jesus Christ, and I want them to discover their passion. I want them to discover God's unique calling in their life to in what that looks like to follow Jesus, whether it's you know, as a professional athlete, that'd be awesome, as a lawyer, as a banker, physician, stay-at-home mom, whatever that is. Like, I just want them to discover that passion, to cultivate it, to stick with it so that God is going to use it and that they understand that that is part of how God has wired them and what he's calling them to. That whatever that whatever that role is that God calls them to, that they would see that as part of their involvement in the mission of God. So on the one hand, it's like I have this vision for just relationally how our family dynamic is and what I want for our family. And the second, just what I want for my kids as they go forward. And so for me, those are the two tracks, right? And so when I think about activities and I think about academics, I think about anything that any of these decisions that we have for our kids. And these are not simple decisions. But one of my criteria is I go, okay, where does it line up with those two? Like, is it actually going to be contributing to our family dynamic? Or is there a danger here that actually, if I spend too many nights where we're rushing, you know, our kids all over for different things and we don't spend time having dinner together, I'm not saying it's every single night, but if I completely give that up, like, there should be a red flag in there for me. Okay, what are we giving up? What are the great things that I want and dream for my family that we're giving up for some really good things? And same with what I want for my kids in the long run, if I'm not giving them space to make decisions and to make decisions about their activities, about what they want to do and pursue, then what are the red flags that should be, you know, popping up for me of going, okay, what on these two tracks, where are we on this? And I think that as parents, like, we have to recognize that this is really what we're supposed to be doing. We are responsible for creating this environment and this culture and having this vision. And then we're responsible for cultivating it and for protecting it. So anything that comes in from outside, anything that is, we're, you know, being called to do this or to try this or to do this, that we're the ones who go, okay, where's this line up? And that's what we have to take really, really seriously. She's very loud. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Is that one mine or yours? I don't even know. Oh, it's yours. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
It's only loud because you thought it was yours.
Exactly. Yeah, whatever. I didn't even notice. I think that this is, you know, we're just getting started. You know, we've got four kids, and my oldest is in second grade, so we're just starting to, like, navigate this. And I think it's very, very difficult. I think it's a hard, and I, you know, we didn't talk about academics, but I think all these questions, we're thinking about the culture of our family. What is that dynamic going to be like? How are you protecting it? How are you cultivating it? And are we making decisions along those lines, or are we making decisions based on what other parents are doing and what just the pressures of North Dallas are, you know, always like in your case, your child is so great, they have to be on team. And there's this pressure that comes out of that. And to be able to stop and say, okay, but what do we really want for our family? Is she going to be an Olympian? Okay, let's think about this. We'll never know. She might have been.
You know, my best friend and I were having this conversation because her daughter is doing competitive cheer now.
Yeah.
After doing gymnastics and dance. And the thing that she and I both talked about is they're all trying to make money. If we can't forget.
Yeah, they're selling something, right?
Companies are selling something.
Yes.
So a lot
yeah,
of
so
kids
true.
Get put on team and put on these things that probably do have some level of talent.
Yeah.
But, you know, five girls go to the Olympics. Five.
Right.
So out of the whole country.
Yeah.
So they're not all going to be Olympians. And
yeah.
Not even mostly going to be Olympians, even the really good ones. So
yeah.
You have to kind of remember some of what they're doing is a sales tool.
And it's not a matter of, like, well, just, you know, ignore your child's passion or their talent and, you know, don't cultivate it, just ignore it. No, that's not what we're trying to say. But at the same time, I want to be like, look, if your child is that gifted, they will find them. You know, it's like if your child, you know, is going to play in the NBA will find them. If they simply play basketball at a very reasonable level as they go up, they're going to get to high school and somebody's going to be like, holy crap, that kid is amazing, you know? So I think we put a lot of weight into they have to have every possible opportunity. If they're that gifted, they're that talented, they're that athletic, or that gifted, whatever area it is, you know, the soccer teams will find you, the NBA will find you, the Major League Baseball team will find you. They find them all over the world. They can find them here as well. James. The Olympics may ruin your child. We've seen that, haven't we? That's terrible. Yeah.
I once had a pastor who, in spite of the fact that they were a balanced family, one of his kids grew up to play professional baseball.
It's my dream, baby, right there. Yeah, yeah. I'm holding out for that. Yeah. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it, but it's not going to run our family. You know? It's not going to run our family.
I would put pressure about the So did Janice say 2 years in high school? Was her reasoning for that to show the grit, or was it for them to figure out whether they, I'm just curious.
I think she was suggesting that as a lengthening the commitment. So it's sort of like those commitment muscles. You're trying to stretch them a little bit more. So she wasn't suggesting that in terms of like a college application. That wasn't her angle. When she was suggesting that, she meant for them. Mm-hmm. So she was all of her recommendations. This wasn't a book on like how to get into college. It was, we want our kids to develop grit, to learn how to cultivate passion, how to persevere, how to put forth effort. And so she was saying, here's some simple steps that you can take using opportunities such as activities to do so. Yeah.
But if they've learned that at a younger age, I wonder. Yeah. It's like you said,
every child's different. Yeah, that was just her kind of, hey, they're younger and they're trying a lot of different things. So a year, you know, that was kind of her rule of thumb. High school, you should start, you know, lengthening it a little bit. I think if you've got a child who already has locked into something, man, fantastic. That's great. But everybody's got that story of the child who tried, you know, 8 different instruments before they settled on one, or maybe never did. And she's saying, hey, that's okay. I think she's giving permission in one sense for the younger kids. It's like, try something new, try something new, try something new. But as long as they have to stick with it, if there's a chance that it is a passion, it can be cultivated in that time. Yeah.
We homeschool, so we have a lot more time to discuss this at home with the kids.
Yeah.
Because I just have more time with them.
Sure.
But I can tell from my experience and from their dad's experience that a lot of times what we have worked towards in our educational career or in our secular career is not where we end up.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many of us here are actually utilizing our college degree.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few of us. But I mean, there are so many examples just around us in real life, there's examples in the Bible, of people that were trained to do something, but that was not their calling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of the apostles, that was not what they were called to do, to be fishermen or lawyers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus trained until he was 30 as a carpenter, but that was not why he was here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that conversation of keeping things open, like this is what we're doing now because we think you're good at it or you can enjoy it, but the Lord may bring you to, I never ever imagine myself as a homeschool mom. Like,
right.
It's not on my radar. But that's what the Lord called me to do.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to do that with all of us, and it's always going to look wonky compared to what it is that we imagined.
Yeah, that's a good point. James.
I'd say for us, we're still kind of in the midst of this, but I would say we kind of approached it more from a worldly standpoint for a while. In the last few years, much more of a Christian. One of the things that's really helped us, and I'll be honest when I say this, and not to get Sunday school points, although you could throw them.
Yeah, of course. But, yeah, I'll start writing some points up for you. Yeah.
But just praying about all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everything for my kids, whether 3 of my kids go to private school, is this where God wants them this year?
Mm-hmm.
In this sport, is this, with this financial commitment and time commitment, is this, where you want this child now? And then as they get older, they get to drive more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. But for us, it's actually, I feel like, for me, I can't speak for Stephanie, but for me, it's been very freeing to know, like, you pray about it, and you feel like this is where our kid is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, not supposed to be doing these other things,
mm-hmm.
then you don't have to worry about it
mm-hmm.
as much anymore. Not to say that it's not hard when there's conflicts, but even week to week, okay, this game is during church. Should she play?
Yeah, you have to figure that out.
And we've had to say no to games sometimes.
Yeah.
Yep. I think the thing for us that was shocking, Faith is 4, she's our oldest.
Yeah.
And this is her first year in school, like in pre-K, not kindergarten.
Yeah.
And like before school started, I was getting an email about like sign up for the school soccer, like the pre-K soccer team. So I was just shocked. I mean, I remember calling him and like, okay, it starts now. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Activity. And like, we got the soccer and the basketball. And I mean, she's done none of it because we're like, oh, no.
She's done none of it, but I love it.
But I mean, we're in the minority
already. Yeah. K-4 level, we are one of a few families that haven't already signed their kids up to start playing in a team. And so the pressure of, like, the community around you starts
absolutely
immediately.
Yeah.
And I think if you aren't talking about it, you have little kids, you're thinking, oh, I'm not to worry about that until they're much, it starts way sooner than you think.
Yeah.
You have to start
for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different for us, right?
Four. You played outside. That's so great. There was no organization.
Yeah.
So that's, it's just, the pressure is crazy.
Yeah, if you haven't signed them up, don't bother, because, I mean, there's no chance.
Right, and now she'll never play it. Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, and she's already, it's already over. It's already over. See, I mean, I'm from Dallas, and so I started when I was 4 or 5 with various activities. That was very... Yeah, and then we moved to Arkansas when I was in 4th grade, and suddenly it was like this... It was a wasteland when it came to activities. Suddenly it was like, play outside! Who's coaching? I don't know. Some guy, you know. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I'm sure it's gotten better now. But I mean, you know, I was in competitive gymnastics from the time I was, you know, 5 or so, and I loved it. That was my thing. And I played soccer and I played baseball too and stuff. But suddenly I moved to Arkansas and it was just, oh my gosh, it was so hard for me because it was just like
they didn't know how to spell gymnastics.
They had no idea. It was just like, it was crazy, you know. And it was very, very difficult. And so there. No, there was. They've been working on it for a long time now. There's actually a pretty good women's program now, but it's a ways behind Texas still for sure. Yeah. Anyway, so I think Carrie and I had very different experiences as kids growing up. And my parents always had me very involved in a lot of activities, and her parents had her very involved in very few, if any, activities. And so that's a part of it as well, I think, as a couple, is navigating, okay, how much, how little, what are you used to, and how have you seen that affect your own development? So anyway, this is a fun topic. There's a lot more we could talk about, but we're going to go. So...